Hey guys, welcome to the Inner Circle Studio. Today we have John Ozzone, videographer of Unveiled. John, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. John, tell us a little bit about Unveiled. This is your videography business.
Yeah. So I've been, you know, doing professional, you know, video work since maybe 2010. Worked for a production company for over a decade, and then eventually went off on my own, started Unveiled. And we focus on colleges. So
yeah.
We work with colleges around the country with a specific kind of offering, which is a subscription model for storytelling. So student and alumni and faculty stories, you know, when colleges want to sort of show instead of just tell the value of their school.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of have a whole annual offering for them. So yeah, it's a fun gig.
That's awesome. It sounds amazing. What a great platform for the universities. Who have you helped? Which universities have you worked with?
Yeah. So we, locally here in Michigan, Rochester Christian University, we've worked with, Walsh College, Baker College, Cleary University, their business school out in Howell, just started work with Miami University.
Wow.
Down in Ohio. And then our biggest client is University of Chicago. So we have contracts with the Data Science Institute and then their professional education institute or department or whatever. And then done some work with University of San Diego. It's ever expanding. Not every college is doing like the full subscription. Sometimes we're just coming in and doing maybe a couple of one-off videos. Like with Walsh, we did a commercial and then we did two alumni stories.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, it's fun. It's really nice to focus on a niche like that because it really helps you kind of, I know like when I sit down in the morning who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not just kind of like, it's hard to market to everybody. If
right.
You're just a video production for anyone that needs a video, that's just a really tough road.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough market to crack. So this is not the first time we've met. You've actually been to the studio before with a mutual connection of ours, Robert Lee from mm-hmm. University FM. And you've collaborated with Robert in University FM also. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, a little bit. So he's been on my podcast. That's when we were here in the studio. So I have a podcast called Higher Ed Storytelling University. And yeah. So Robert and I generally talked to the same people. You know,
a little crossover,
a lot of crossover in our target audiences, you know, same people that would be thinking about video content are also, thinking about podcast content or are adjacent to the people thinking,
right.
You know,
that
thinking
makes
about
sense.
Podcast content. So, so yeah, Robert and I were friends on LinkedIn for a little bit. And then, he was like, "Hey, I'm just in Rochester Hills." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, like you always just think like, you know, when you start to network with people in a niche,
right.
You just assume they're like someone in California.
Yep.
I don't pay much attention to where these people." So we've hung out and he's been on my podcast and he's helped me out a lot with stuff with Unveiled and
yeah.
connecting me with people. So
he's a great guy. I'm looking forward to collaborating with Robert as well. Yeah, that's a great connection to have. And you guys are doing great things with, you know, connecting people through higher ed. I mm-hmm. think that's some great storytelling. Something interesting that I know about you is that you worked on the Joseph Project,
yeah.
which is, that is centered around, it's a nonprofit centered around, human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about that. I know you recently won, pretty prestigious award for that, for your work there. And yeah. I'd like to congratulate you on that.
Thanks. Yeah. The Joseph Project has been a client of mine since like right at the beginning of the pandemic. And a friend of mine started working there as their marketing director. And she was like, "Hey, you know, we've got this one story that we're telling and will you help us out with it?" And it was a woman from West Bloomfield, you know, went to West Bloomfield High School or whatever, just like completely like affluent, normal family that was trafficked.
Wow.
Got into drugs and, you know, one thing led to another, was just in shady situations and then ended up being trafficked and like, you know, held hostage in a motel. And I mean, the movie style of
yeah,
of trafficking.
This happens.
And because so a lot of times, you know, trafficking is not like you would think. It really isn't like someone, at least a lot of trafficking in America is not someone chained to the wall somewhere. Right. It's just usually very emotional manipulation by someone that they already know, someone they're in a relationship with or something like that. Anyway, so we told that that story, and then we've just continued ever since. And it's just been such a joy, you know, to meet these incredible women and just to hear their stories of resilience. One of my favorite stories we did last year was Leslie, and she was out in Grand Rapids, and she was grew up in an abusive home, got into drugs and things like that, and then ended up getting into a relationship with a guy that ended up trafficking her, and she was trafficked for over like 20 or 30 years or something. Wow. Like that, like a long time. And so what the Joseph Project does is these victims or these trafficking survivors, they rack up charges on their record. They'll get a prostitution charge, or they'll get caught with drugs because they were forced to run drugs like they didn't have a choice, you know, or whatever else, you know, their traffickers kind of, they wouldn't have done otherwise.
They're manipulated into these acts, these crimes, right?
Yeah. They're not like natural born criminals. It's just, right, they're in a situation that they can't get out of.
Right.
And they rack up these charges on their record. So when they actually do find a way to leave that lifestyle, they're still trapped. You know, they're still a victim because they can't really, sometimes they can't get a license. They can't volunteer anywhere. They can't get a job places because that shows up on their record, a prostitution charge, you know, can't work at a daycare like that, you know, or something like that. And so, so the Joseph Project connects, trafficking survivors with pro bono legal, like attorneys across the country who will advocate for them to the courts, say, hey, this person was actually a victim, and here's their story, and here's like actually how they've been like really getting their life together. And anyway, so Leslie was the first human trafficking survivor in Michigan to receive a gubernatorial, is the word, pardon from the governor of Governor Whitmer. So she had too many felonies to actually qualify her for this law that allows survivors of human trafficking to get their records expunged. She was kind of like past the point, you know, it's ineligible for expungement. The only shot.
There's a statute of limitation on that.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know the depths of it, but it was something like she had too many felonies or they were too serious or something like that.
Got it.
So it was just like a Hail Mary attempt. It's like, this is the only option, is to contact Governor Whitmer and see if she'll do something. And it worked.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, that's what the Joseph Project does. Super amazing organization.
And you were part of that whole initiative. You filmed that and documented parts of that.
I came along after they had already done the work.
Okay.
I tell the stories after they've achieved the win.
Got it.
You know? And so I met Leslie, after she had already gotten pardoned, and then we kind of told her story from beginning to end. But yeah, I mean, they, behind the scenes, you know, the work is, you know, going to court with survivors and helping them navigate the legal system. Even sometimes it's just as simple as picking up the phone and like clearing up some traffic tickets. Like, you're like, hey, this, like, I did one story that was like, she got like a ton of traffic tickets from trying to escape her trafficker.
Wow.
Like, got speeding tickets, you know? And then those turned into warrants because her trafficker wouldn't let her pay them. He didn't want to pay for them, and he didn't want to let her pay for them. So they turned into warrants, which then turns into, you know, a mess on your record.
Yeah. I think people really don't understand like what human trafficking looks like these days. I know a dear friend of mine's daughter was caught up in that, mm-hmm, and subsequently died of a drug overdose, mm-hmm, I think probably to escape.
Yeah.
And that was maybe the only way.
Yeah.
And I think it looks a lot different than what people think. And that's amazing. So you've been a part of that, the Joseph Project, is it 5 years? Do I have that right?
About probably 4 years now.
4 years. Okay. Yeah. Wow, man, that's some really good work you're doing there.
Yeah. It's really rewarding. And, you know, so I'm just, you know, I just work with them on a contract basis. You know, there's a graphic designer that does all the design work and, you know, other people that do other stuff. So I'm just kind of part of I just play the video.
Yeah. Have
the
a great video team. Part.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's crucial. What was the award? You won the award. What was the title of the,
the Joseph Project was celebrating, I believe they were celebrating 5 years in, you know, in existence. And they just kind of gave out some like internal awards to like people that have made an impact on the organization. So it wasn't like an Emmy award or
wow. Come on. You're underselling yourself. That's some really good work,
but it's nice that that's the one trophy I have in my office. So,
yeah.
And it's nice because like, you
know, it's a beautiful project.
I do all this higher ed work. I come from a background of, you know, doing urban ministry and doing things like that. And serving in the church and stuff like that. So to kind of sidestep from higher ed and do something that really not that higher ed isn't making an impact on the world, but like quite a bit of a difference of like, yeah. You know, when you can tell a story,
it's gritty,
through video that some attorney in another state sees and go, I want to do that for someone. And then they do that for someone. And then the result is someone's completely free. I mean, that's what happens when people watch these, they're used to get attorneys on board who will just really lock arms with the mission.
It's huge.
And so that's just a whole different ball game than, you know, talking about, an alumni who got the job that they wanted, which is also important. It's just not quite as like
apples and oranges. Yeah. Yeah, man.
You know,
wow. You know, I was also shocked to learn not too long ago that, Oakland County has a high rate of human trafficking, mm-hmm. pretty local, pretty, interesting fact.
It is. I want to say someone told me it was like Troy, which is where I live.
It's Auburn
like,
Hills, I had heard too, was a spot.
It's like one of the main through points. I don't know how, you know, really how that works. Because there is the kind of trafficking that someone pulls up and opens a van and
sure.
throws you in and that's it.
Right.
You know, that generally is not what trafficking generally looks like. It's very a lot more subtle. But I have a whole new perspective on, you know, when you see maybe at night and if you're driving down Detroit in Detroit and you're seeing a woman on the street that's soliciting, to me I'm like, that's, she's probably not just doing that because she wants to,
right? She's being forced into it.
And the cops have a long way to go in understanding that,
right.
Like there's just a lot of understanding that needs to happen that these aren't just some drug addicted hopeless sort of people that are out here just trying to solicit all over the place and make the world a terrible place or whatever that they think. And so they give them all these tickets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, but it really is like,
it's part of a system and it keeps them in it. And
yeah, if law enforcement really knew what was going on, you know, behind the scenes, and they would, you know, stop to kind of think about who could be controlling this person.
Yeah.
It would be a different story. That's why the Leslie, the one that I told you about, she said the one ticket that really made her upset, or the one charge that made her upset, was she got, her trafficker was beating her up, and then she was trying to defend herself. And so she made some marks on him, and then the cops showed up.
Wow.
And he pinned it on her. She went to jail.
Domestic violence. And yeah. She was the culprit, right?
Yeah. She went to jail, and, you know, you can't just like come out and say that you're being trafficked, because that's going to cause a lot of problems.
Right.
So. But yeah, I mean, it's very subtle, and it's scary. And I have two daughters, and you know, it's just something that we really are tuned into, like what kind of conversations are they having with people online?
Oh, it's a whole nother ball game now with the all the internet activity. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, my oldest Ellie, well, my youngest is Rylan too. She's six. They both like Roblox, but Ellie is more into Roblox because she gets on it with her friends and stuff. We have like the chat turned off and stuff. Cause one of the stories I did through the Joseph Project was a teen girl. So there was, before TikTok was TikTok, it was called Musical.ly or something like that.
Interesting.
And you would do these dances to songs, and she was like, I don't know, 12 or 13, and got manipulated by some guy on there to send him pictures. And then she was blackmailed, and like, it was this whole thing that just ruined her life.
Wow.
You know, and it's so subtle, like the process of that happening. It's not, you know, it's like they are day after day perfecting their game.
It's carefully curated.
Yeah. How to manipulate people. And if you're not like really careful,
they're masterminds. Right?
Yeah.
They know what they're doing and they're good at it.
It's not like someone coming up just randomly and being like, hey, do you want to send me inappropriate pictures?
Yeah.
They'd be like, no, of course not. You're weird.
There's a whole lot of breadcrumbing happening there. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're a girl dad. That's a whole new ball game now these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love having girls. I wouldn't have it any other way. I've always wanted girls. I've never been super sporty. And you know, I have nephews and stuff, and I'm like the favorite uncle, cuz I'm like, you know, I pick them up and roughhouse with them and all this stuff. So I can hack it with boys, but something just special about that daddy-daughter kind of relationship that I just really cherish with my kids.
I have a lot of great friends who are currently experiencing the girl dad trend.
Yeah.
And they're embracing it and they love it and they're great dads and they're enjoying the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah, so they're my youngest Rylan. She had her kindergarten graduation today. So it was kind of weird. So now she's going into first grade and
time is a thief.
It's going.
Yeah.
It's just like, seemed like just yesterday we were doing kindergarten orientation.
Right. Yeah. So how long have you and your wife been together?
We've been together. Geez. I want to say we've probably been together like 16 years, but we just celebrated 14 years married in April.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Your wife's name is Laura.
Laura.
And interesting fact about Laura is she's involved in trauma treatment.
Yeah.
So you guys are just like two rock stars saving the world, man.
Well, it's just, you know, that's one of the things that we bonded over was just our mutual, you know, compassion for people, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we were dating, at one point I was living in a house in Hamtramck, which was like a ministry house. And we had some, you know, kids in the neighborhood that we would kind of mentor and things like that. And then she lived over in Highland Park, which is just a stone's throw away from Hamtramck. And there was a ministry across the street from her that she was really involved in and mentoring these young girls and stuff like that. And so that's just kind of how, you know, our relationship started in some ways. And,
very much soulmates, it sounds like.
Yeah. Eventually we got married and, we moved to Kalamazoo to get her master's degree in trauma focused, clinical therapy. And, she did that. And now she's doing it.
That's amazing. I think that's great. I think, the right people came together and, sounds like your girls have two great parents. They're very blessed.
Ellie's my sensitive one. She's nine and she'll come home and just tell us all about her day.
Yeah.
Someone said this to her and her feelings or whatever. And she'll say, I can't talk to dad because dad's not a therapist. So like she'll always go straight to mom, and Laura will sometimes be like, you know, your dad does care. He can talk to you. But I will admit, I don't always know what to say. And my wife is like way better at threading that needle of helping them you know, validating them and kind of, you know, doing the whole therapy.
Experience thing. Is the best teacher. Yeah. Right. And then I'm sure there'll be that shift with both girls between both mom and dad. Like they're going to do the crossover thing where they're going to want to go to her more than you and then you more than her, you know, I'm sure. That's amazing. Gosh, being a girl dad and a full-time business owner, entrepreneur, what are some of the wellness practices you weave in to kind of, you know, de-stress, take care of yourself, a little bit of self-care?
Yeah. So I actually, a few years ago picked up a hobby. So I have a lot of hobbies. I'll just get like impulsively interested in something and then just go down a whole rabbit hole. But I got into making tobacco pipes.
Oh yeah. I saw that. I was looking at, some of the social media earlier today. That's a really nice pipe. You made that?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's from a block of briar wood. And, it's just, you know, just my buddy and I, a long time ago got into pipe smoking just as like an occasional thing. And then ever since I've always been like, what would it take to make one? Just as something really interesting about this, like this very simple object that's very beautiful. And also it has like this sense of like history to it. You know, it's like, you know, it's not like people, you can't just like go to CVS and buy a pipe anymore.
Right. Exactly. You know,
it's like this sort of long lost art. So that's kind of how I de-stress, you know, a little bit. I'll take breaks from editing videos or whatever it is, planning for productions, and then I'll just go sand something or, you know, just whatever.
Sounds very therapeutic. And then you have this beautiful piece of art after, and then you enjoy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I sell them sometimes. The and then sometimes if I mess up on one, I'll just keep that one for myself.
Yeah. I was going to ask, you sell them sometimes?
Yeah. I mean, that's really not like, I mean, there are way easier ways to make money.
Right. Of course. You're not like trying to become a millionaire selling the pipes, but it's like, you know,
I make them for me. I make them cause I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And if someone on Instagram wants to buy one or a friend wants to commission one, then sure.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it is. But then also just like, you know, wellness practices you're asking about. I go on a lot of walks. And for me, like something about going on a walk will just get me unstuck.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm telling you, that's the way.
I don't know what it is, but I'll just be stuck on a problem and then I'll just go. We have a little small little man-made lake in my neighborhood. And so I'll just go for a walk around the lake. It's like half a mile or something like that. And then I'm like, okay, problem solved.
Yes. I can really relate to that. That's that's pretty much how I operate daily. I have to do a daily walk, sometimes twice a day, just getting some mobility, some motion, and thought process.
Yeah. You know. We just got a therapy dog too. Her name's Mabel. So she goes to work with my wife to go see some clients. But that was just something that we always wanted, you know, was a therapy dog. We had a previous black lab that we tried to train as a therapy dog.
And
she just did not have the temperament, just couldn't really hack it. But this dog, we just got her. She's a puppy still. And she's a mini golden doodle. And we got her from a breeder and then had her professionally trained as a therapy dog, which was the best investment.
Amazing.
I mean, it's expensive.
I really wanted to do that with, I have two Great Danes and I really wanted to do that. One of them is just, her temperament's very gentle. They're the gentle giants, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, realizing that I'm not a dog trainer.
Right.
Was revolutionary for me because I pretty much tried to train our previous lab myself. And so a lot of her behaviors were probably my fault.
But I can relate.
And, I just love Mabel. She's just so sweet and she'll just hang out with me all day cause I work from home and then we'll go on walks together. And
yeah,
you know, so it's nice having, mostly having the house to myself, but then just this little creature that's just kind of putzing around.
Yeah, it's therapeutic also just to go out and walk your dogs.
Yeah,
for sure. A lot of times I'll just for alone time though, I'll go out on my own.
Yeah.
Just walk them later.
Yeah.
Walk me first, then them.
Right.
or the other way around.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So are there any groups that you get a part of just outside of like I train jiu-jitsu and do some Tai Chi and things like that. I forced myself into getting into some of those activities during COVID and just trying to manage just entrepreneurship, running my business as an essential organization. And that was an extra push that I needed just to connect, you know. Mm-hmm. Is there anything like you get involved in outside of like
yeah, walking? I mean, so I was getting into, you know, like working out, but like specifically Olympic style lifting, which is odd because I'm not like real jacked or anything like that. But I was getting in really into it, and it's very like technique focused, you know, and all this stuff. But then I hurt my back, and turns out I have arthritis in my back. So that's not actually I couldn't find a doctor that recommended that I continue doing that sport. So believe me, I tried to get many second and third opinions. But outside of that, like, I'm not really, honestly, like, it's weird. it's my wife Laura makes fun of me because, you know, we used to have like a lot of friends, you know, and then something about like you get married and you have kids. And I think men just like kind of start to turn inward, and you look around and that's like, oh, I don't like hang out with anybody.
Yeah, no, I get that. I feel that. And I'm not even married with kids, but I found myself just disconnecting anyway because I married my business. You know what I mean? So, and then you kind of just, you take a look around, you're like, hey.
Well, other people's priorities shift too.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's just like my best friend, Nick, and I, we used to hang out like every day, and then he got married, and then that, like, you know, his wife was like his default, and then I got married, and so it's, people just kind of split off. But like, yeah, I actually for a little while tried to start like an intentional like men's group of like guys that are on sort of like my periphery of like people I've hung out with, like, you know, sporadically here. I'm like, let's try to get together and just, you
intentionally
know, have a beer and just get to know each other and just like say we have a group or worked out for a little while. But
it's hard to keep a band together, so to speak, you know, because everyone's going in different directions, you know, all the time. Yeah. But I like the thought of it though. Yeah. That's a good initiative to have.
Yeah. But I'm very much a homebody, you know. If it's, I'm super introverted, so I'm perfectly fine. If I have a free night, just not doing anything.
I feel that.
You know, not going to see anybody. My wife, because we one of the best things that we have implemented, you know, in our family has been we each get a night off per week. So like Tuesdays, like I'll take over, do the bedtime, do the entire, you know, routine, and Laura can go off, do whatever she wants. No one can bug her. That's kind of the rule.
I like that.
So mine's actually coming up tomorrow.
I'm amazing.
Looking forward to it.
What's on the books?
I think I'm just going to hang out in my garage and work on pipes. And it's just a very, like, you know, I'll listen to podcasts out there and just like, I love that.
But I'm into the garage thing too, because I remodeled my garage and I put a mini split in there. So I did like, you know, the walls are drywalled and I epoxied the floor. I've got a sauna out there.
Oh, wow.
And so like, it's not like one of those big fancy saunas. It just does the job. It's great. And, I'll get in there or, I'm not doing anything as cool as making pipes, but maybe I could get a training from you on that. But no, but I'll do things like I have a grappling dummy or whatever, and I'll play with that for jiu-jitsu or just whatever, listen to music or podcast, same thing. But like, there's something cool about being out in the garage.
Yeah, I love it. It's like, it's just so therapeutic. I wish it was temperature controlled out there. You know, now now is the time where it's generally good temperature, and then fall is kind of good. It's getting into like where it's going to be either like scorching hot or yeah. just freezing cold out there.
I got to tell you, the best investment for that is a mini split. Like that will.
What is a mini split?
It's a mini split. It's a heating and cooling system. So it mounts right up onto the wall, and it's just like an it's just like having an extra bedroom in your house.
Okay.
Kind of. It basically makes your garage part of the house. So it's controlled by remote, and so I can keep it 70, 75, 80, 82, 60, 65, you know, it's okay. heat and cool.
Cool.
Hot and cool.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it.
But yeah, because I like to spend a lot of time out there, and so in the winter I have like propane heaters that, you know, but then you're always going to Lowe's to change out the propane.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I like grilling a lot. So I know I go through a lot of propane. I grill all year long.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm working on my grilling skills. I've never been very good at it.
Have you picked up a Blackstone yet? Like with the griddle and all that?
But you know, I keep seeing my friends getting them.
Yeah. They're pretty sweet. You can pretty much do anything on there. It's that griddle style.
Yeah.
So it's like whatever you want, hash brown, steak, you know, eggs, bacon. It's great because you cook on that outside and it doesn't stink up your place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I for like sure. That. Yeah. I'm trying to get better. I'm really into, I'm binging all the Top Chef episodes. So now I'm kind of like trying to bring this like sort of professional culinary, you know,
I like that.
Thing
I
into. Like that. I'm like, how would they do this on the show? Like, what would Tom Colicchio say about,
you know, there's something therapeutic about cooking because I entered, a health and fitness competition last year to raise $20,000 for two nonprofits. And you had to put yourself out there on social media, kind of market yourself and all the things that you were doing for fitness and wellness. And cooking was like part of that. So like meal prep, I will left to my own devices, eat out of a little black meal prep container.
Oh yeah.
And like nothing fancy whatsoever. But you know, if I'm prepping for somebody else or like I was doing that stuff, I bought some dishes and I started cooking and actually prepping these meals, and people were messaging me like, do you have a professional chef coming over there to make those and prep those? And I was like, no, this is just how I would do it. Yeah. And it turned out I was good at it. You know, yeah. I was like, there's something to it. There's an art to it. You know, uh-huh. I enjoyed that. And then I got heavily involved with the griddle. Or the Blackstone, you know, yeah. And so that was a huge help in prepping meals.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up, my dad was and still is like a gourmet home chef.
Wow.
You know, he's never, he always like kind of wanted to open a restaurant, but he's just like a very good hobbyist. So I always been very intimidated to ever have my dad and my stepmom over for dinner because I just feel like it's, I can't. He's got very high standards.
You're right. You know, exactly.
But we always had the Food Network on in our house growing up. Like back when it was mostly just, you know, a guy or a woman actually cooking and teaching you how to cook. Now it's all these game shows and
right
and stuff like that.
But, do you ever cook with the girls, your daughters?
Yeah. This morning, my youngest Rylan actually really loves, like, she's had the longest, like, I want to do it. Phase of, you know, like I remember when Ellie went through that, like 2 or 3 years old, it lasted about a year. And it's like, oh, I want to zip up my coat and it's going to take 10 minutes to, you know,
yeah, I know.
Or I want to buckle my seat into my car seat and that's, you know, it's freezing cold. And so you're just like, oh my gosh.
Right. Patience.
but Rylan, she just loves, she loves to cook. She loves to do art. She just loves, she's very, she's just very determined. Like she can focus on something and just get really into it. But yeah, normally if I'm going to make breakfast, like this morning I was making eggs for her. She's like, can I do it? And she like dumps like a bunch of milk in the eggs. I'm like, oh, I'm like, all right, we'll see how that turns out.
Right.
But like, it's just fun. She, you know, they both love to just hang out with me and do whatever I'm doing. So
it's cool to see, young people come into their gifts and talents organically, you know, mm-hmm. what they're interested in. And I have a godson, he's 10. He's amazing. He has Down syndrome and he's got all kinds of gifts and talents and
yeah.
I love it. And so when I get to, he has an older brother too. And if ever I get to spend time with them and I've done some overnights, they like to, you know, kind of mock what you're doing, you know, kind of thing. I'm sure your daughters do it to you all the time.
Yeah.
You know, little sponges.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah. My kids love to make fun of me. And so on Father's Day and Mother's Day, we started a tradition where we will do like a roast of the,
nice.
of the parent in question.
Yeah.
So their roasts of me are always just hilarious. Usually some form of like, turn off the air conditioner, turn off these lights when you leave the room, you know? So it's funny to see, you know, how they see me, you know?
Oh yeah. It's always interesting to hear yourself, to see yourself played back.
Yeah.
Man, so with starting Unveiled, I have to ask, was that an easy process to start up Unveiled, a videography business? It seems like that's a big market right now. And, you know, I'm sure you're in high demand.
Yeah, I mean, so coming from a previous production company that I worked at, I really like just learned how the whole business works. And at a certain point, I was kind of just like, well, kind of doing all the stuff here of running a business for someone else, you know, and happens to be, you know, a buddy of mine, so happy to do it.
Right.
You know, but at a certain point I was just like, I think I can do all of this stuff on my own. And so was it hard? It was made easier by the fact that I had Baker College at the time. I had been freelancing with them. So I had some consistent work with them. And then the Joseph Project at the time had just hired me. And so the big push to go off on my own was both of them. We had like annual meetings of like, here's what we're going to do for the year. Mm-hmm. And it was like, their needs were like, it was like, I either have to say no to freelancing or I have to quit my job to just manage these two clients. And I might. And so I was just kind of like, I think I can do this. I'll just go off on my own. So it was nice to have kind of a soft landing. You know, it wasn't like I intended to save up money before I
took the leap.
Before I took the leap. But, but once I made the decision in my head, I was just so excited. I just I couldn't wait. But so I was like,
well, to have two solid clients to lead off with, I mean, what a great start.
Yeah. So. And then so then it became how do I want to focus the company? And it was sort of like, it was sort of between nonprofit or higher ed based on those two clients. I decided higher ed was probably the more, in demand one that where they're actively budgeting for media production and stuff like that. So that's probably, so that seemed like the best way to go, but was it hard? Yeah. I mean, it's anytime, like what I've learned from being a business owner is that nothing is ever easy. Nothing that I think should be a no-brainer for people to buy into is going to be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you come up with a subscription model like that and I'm like, no one else is doing this. Like people are going to be lining up, you know, to hire me for this. But what I got instead was like, oh, that's a really cool idea. You know, and that's about as far as that went, you know? So, so it's taken, I'm really now probably 3 years into the business, just starting to hit that upward curve of like compounding results where I've, you know, I started a podcast a couple of years ago. I started a weekly newsletter that I do, you know, talk about content marketing for higher ed marketers, and have been showing up just day after day on LinkedIn and, you know, really just pushing through, like really just pushing through, people not seeming to care, you know, it's like nothing went viral, you know, nothing was easy, you know, for me, it was really just brick by brick by brick. And then, and now I'm starting to hit a point where, it's getting a little easier because of the momentum that I've built through all that sort of friction. But you know, as a business owner, when you start a business, now the algorithms are all sending you these courses on how to make $1 million overnight.
Right. It's a lot to keep up with. Yeah.
So, I've really like what I've learned is that those those ads that, you know, that I'm served that are just like, oh, we can 10x your business in 1 month or whatever, or just everything they make it seem like this is easy. And if you just have the key that we have,
right,
it will unlock all the results. You just haven't hired the right person, or you haven't done the right steps. And nothing could be further from the truth. Because I've kind of gotten distracted with some of those things where like, oh, maybe I should be marketing this way or doing this. And every road has come back to, no matter what I do to grow my business, it's going to be hard. So yeah. Just pick some stuff,
right,
and do the hard stuff. And eventually
hard work pays off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So right. It's, and
there's no shortcuts. I mean,
it really
isn't. You think that you're getting involved with a shortcut, or you know what I mean? You're getting help with that. There, you've got the secret sauce, so to speak, and it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it helps to have an offering.
Yeah.
You know, so like what I, you know, sometimes people that are looking to go full-time freelance or whatever, or people that run video businesses, you know, will reach out to me and tell me about your subscription thing. And what I tell them is like, it really is, it's helpful for people to be able to grasp what you do by having a specific offering, like not just video, even if you were to go into the higher ed niche and go, I make videos for colleges. That's still like really vague.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so I have found that, you know, coming up with a product that's packaged and saying like, this is what you're getting. This is exactly what you're getting when you hire me. This is the exact process we're going to take you through. And they can sort of see that transformation of like, we don't have any content, but after a year, we're going to have 132 videos, you know, that we've made, you know, with Unveiled. And so that is clear for them. So even having a clear offering, it's difficult. You still have to find ways to just be consistent and show up and get the value across, and people have to hear it from all kinds of different sources.
Yeah.
You know, they say that you have to hear something 8 times before they do anything.
And right.
I've found that to be very true. I have a webinar right now that I'm hosting at the end of the month with a buddy of mine. His name is Rob Clark, and he's got like 3.8 million followers across TikTok and Instagram. Wow. and YouTube. And his family is called That Tall Family. That's kind of their shtick, and they're all very tall.
Okay.
They do like little challenges and just funny things. But he's really active in he works for Greenville University, I think in South Carolina is where Greenville is. And he's real active in like helping colleges figure out how to crack that code of like short form video. So we're doing this webinar that I'm telling you this because it just seems like it would be a no brainer where I'm like, you know, it's like, you know, mastering TikTok reels and shorts for higher ed.
Yeah. No, I'm interested. I'd like to join that webinar. I'm not part of the higher ed.
Yeah.
Circuit, but I mean, I'm into podcasting and I have a YouTube channel and I'm learning about TikTok myself right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Come on down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but the funny thing is that I'm realizing is I've marketed it in my newsletter. I've marketed it on my podcast. I've shared it on LinkedIn. I've talked to people, you know, about it in person. And it's like sometimes the people that you think have heard this so many times, they're like, oh, you're doing a webinar. I'm like, dude, where?
Right. Did you not see?
And it's like, it might be like the fifth mode of communication where they're like, all right, I'm going to register now.
Well, that's interesting. That's a really good point too, because you have all the social medias and you're talking about something, you think people are seeing it because you're promoting it on every platform that you have. And it's people that you have regular communication with, even on social media.
Yeah.
But then you talk to someone just to your point and no, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. Really. It's like, and they might see it. They might see what you're offering,
but everyone's glossing
and it just, they keep scrolling. Okay. It really does take like several different angles of promoting something before they go, oh, this is actually, people are actually doing this and I should be part of those people too.
Right.
And I think that's really like, that's what marketing is all about. And I think as a, you know, a solopreneur, you know, and for entrepreneurs, like people need, I just feel like there's not enough people talking about the fact that like marketing your business is a grind, and it's you have to just stay consistent.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a wealth of people saying this is easy.
It's not easy. And it's to your point, consistency is the key.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, even on this webinar, I'm like, I feel like people should be signing up in, you know,
droves.
Yeah. And, but it really wasn't until I started yesterday, actually started, I had like 15 people registered. And then I started, reaching out to like higher ed influencers to say, hey, we'll plug your brand, if you help us promote this. And now the floodgates are starting to open now.
Fantastic.
Today, over in the last 24 hours, we've like doubled our registrants, and I'm like, okay, finally we're getting unstuck here. But like, I've been doing marketing for a long time, and it's never easy.
No, I was just going to say too, like, I think, with that way the algorithms are now, and I just think everything seems to be hit or miss. It's like, I can't predict on one platform or another what's going to get, you know, this many views or likes or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
I'm always shocked when something peaks over something else. You know what I mean? I'm just like, okay, well, how'd that shake down? It can depend on the day of the week, the time, to the content. I mean, it just seems hit or miss to me.
It is very hit or miss. Yeah. It's just such a crapshoot. And, I've started like, cause LinkedIn has been where I've focused 100% of my energy. And I do like, so like my podcast, I'll break it up into snippets, and I have a virtual assistant that, will take those snippets and schedule them on TikTok and YouTube shorts and stuff like that. But I don't really pay too much attention to it. I'm really like me and my brain. I don't outsource any of the LinkedIn stuff,
okay,
you know, because I'm like, want to really be intentional about that. And I've started to get into a groove of knowing what messages start to take off, and why. But it really is a learning process of like trying things every day and going, why didn't that work? Why did that work? Was it a time of day thing? But there's so many like dumb things where it's like, if you post a link on LinkedIn, they're going to dock you. You're going to get kicked out of the algorithm because they don't want people going off the platform. If you tag somebody in a post,
yes,
that then doesn't engage with your post, they'll bump you down in the algorithm.
If you tag somebody in the post and the person that you tagged doesn't interact, that's a mark against you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting. I've noticed some of these things that you're saying, like, if you're promoting your YouTube channel on your Facebook platform, you're getting docked for that.
Yeah. So you have to find these workarounds, but really it's, LinkedIn has been hugely helpful for me in just making, connections with people. I started this year, 2024, started off like with a goal of like, you know, wanting my business to really lean into creating meaningful relationships with people. And so I bought a timer, like a little, I don't think it's called like a Pomodoro timer or something. Well, circuit, looks like a little Google Nest thing.
Anyway, okay.
So I set my timer for 30 minutes every morning, and I'll just connect with people on LinkedIn and reach out and try to like actually consume their content and then have a thoughtful thing to say to them in a direct message about it or whatever else. And so really using LinkedIn in that way has been very helpful for me. And that's been a really good habit, for me to get into. But then also when you then pair that with, you're providing regular content that's valuable to those people, I found that's a really powerful combination. It's just like, but there is a lot of gaming of the system that you have.
I'm interested in the webinar. I think it'd be great for the audience to be able to sign up for that too, if there's an option.
Yeah. I mean, we'll be talking about, higher ed, but really it's
applicable, I mean, to anybody,
applicable to anyone.
Yeah.
If you go to, crowdcast.io/c/short-form-video. That's the URL.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested. That's because I'm fascinated by how everything works, and everybody seems to have a different perspective. And a lot of people are lured in by those ads that they see, you know, that where there's the, here's the key to, here's the formula, you know, but I mean, those are good conversations to have. I'm also fascinated by LinkedIn. I'm not, that's one of the platforms I'm not on. I just haven't never tapped into that one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, cause I'm learning about all the other ones.
Yeah.
So there's so many to keep up with. Now there's Threads. Have you joined
I'm Threads? I'm on Threads. My Pipes, I have a Pipes account on Threads.
I don't even know what Pipes is.
No, like my tobacco pipes. Like,
oh, I have a, gotcha.
I'll post like behind the scenes of me making those.
Got it.
If I post it to Instagram, it'll just automatically kick it over to Threads.
Yeah.
I have not logged in or checked anything, a single like or comment since like day one when I signed up for Threads. I got in there, I signed up. I was like, man, this is just another thing.
I said the same thing. I'm like, now I got to keep up on this one.
Yeah. And I don't get it. Like, I'm like, how is this any different than all these other ones? So I don't see Threads sticking around.
Right. Yeah.
It had a really hot moment there. It launched like really successfully. And then I think everyone was kind of just like, what do we do here?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because it's the same as everything else.
Yeah.
It seems. I can tend to get caught up in my head about these platforms, like how often to post. You know what I mean? That's another thing too, where it's like people are very caught up and you have to post, you know, daily and all day long. Is mm-hmm. that something that is that a process practice that you subscribe to daily and all day long?
Yeah, I mean, not all day long, but I do try to post Monday through Friday on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And then if I can get something in on Saturday or Sunday, cool. But so that's another one of my weekly habits is scheduling the week's worth of posts on LinkedIn. And then I just don't think about it the rest of the week.
Got it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, really trying to have something thoughtful to say. And I think that's what I think a lot of people get wrong about any sort of content marketing or social media is they think that a content strategy is saying, look at this award I won, or, you know, we were in the news, or, you know, look, we got a new client, or it's like all this like me stuff, like celebrate with me, which is like great, fine. But that's probably better for like your friends and family to interact with on Facebook.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like people go to LinkedIn for a specific type of content and you have to show up with that
meaningful content.
Yeah. Right. Meaningful content that moves their professional or personal life forward. And then in the same way, you know, I go on Instagram or TikTok and I scroll, you know, reels and TikToks and stuff. And I'm just looking for funny stuff. You
yeah.
know?
Something to just to alleviate yeah. stress.
Yeah. I'm not looking to learn anything.
Right.
And so
that's
actually
just mindless content, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's just the relatable stuff really takes off. So I've actually started experimenting with my podcast has a TikTok account and I've started experimenting with like using like, you know, trending sounds or like have like, you know, the templates or whatever, it's like Post Malone or something, like he's like saying something and then you can whatever attach right. some sort of POV to it. But that's been fun. That's been fun to just experiment with that. But yeah, I think too many people just use social media as like a look at me kind of thing
sure.
and act like people are supposed to care about that.
Right. Exactly. I don't think anyone knows these days what to do with social media.
Yeah.
It's a lot to manage, but I really like your point of view on setting the intentional relationship building. I think that comes off very authentic with you because, we've interacted two times, but each time that I've interacted with you, you just come off as a very authentic person. And, I really enjoy the conversations that we have. And, I think that, that the people that you interact with probably feel the same way. I think that that's very, you know, very, not only is it smart, but it's meaningful and it comes from a place of sincerity mm-hmm. with you. So that's great. I think that that's good. I think that'll take your business, you know, to the yeah. next level.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, I think especially on LinkedIn, it's a breath of fresh air when someone actually has something meaningful that they've researched about you and meaningful to say about it. Cause you know, the term is called pitch slapped. You
okay. know? I've never heard of this term.
What it pitched to when you're pitch slapped, it's like someone on LinkedIn sends you a connection request and you accept it. And then they immediately pitch you their business in the DMs.
Shit. Okay.
And that's just like rampant
yeah.
on LinkedIn. So everyone's got their guard up against that. But when, you know, someone reaches out, you know, my hope is when, you know, when I reach out and I'm like, I genuinely want to know what you do, what problems you have. Can I help in any way? It doesn't even have to be like, you have to hire my company. I just like, I just genuinely would like to, you know, build some sort of connection that's not just being like LinkedIn.
That's always worked for me. And the reason why is because one thing leads to another. You never know who you're talking to or who can help you while you're thinking you're helping them or vice versa.
Yeah.
And it just organically happens like that. Just take, it's just about taking time and being an intentionally good human. You know?
Yeah. Oh man. The story that I always tell about that is in my previous job, we would get these people cause I would do all the sales and sell, you know, quote all the video packages out and stuff. And we would get these calls all the time. And it's like, hey, my daughter's like having a dance recital. Will you guys film that? And we're kind of like, we're a more like cinema type of film company.
Right.
And so we would always just be like, oh, yeah, this is not really what we do. So we had this guy call up one day and he's like, hey, I'm having a 50-year class reunion at Henry Ford. At the time, 50 years prior to that, they were in this like one room schoolhouse that they would go to at Henry Ford, which you could visit today. But they had like real school there. And I'm like, okay, class reunion, probably not going anywhere. I quote him like what I would quote any other, you know, corporate client. He was like, all right, let's do it. So I'm like, all right. So show up, filming this thing. It's like the hottest day of the summer. I end up sitting next to his wife as we're waiting to get into this restaurant. And just striking up a conversation with her and not thinking anything of it. Turns out she is the heir to the Hearst Corporation.
Wow.
Like her great, great, great grandpa or whatever was William Randolph Hearst.
Wow.
And so she had a ton of money.
Yeah.
and she, long story short, she ended up hiring our company to do, probably spent like over $250,000 on doing this.
That's amazing.
This documentary on the sport of equestrian show jumping. We flew all over the country and went to these horse shows up in Calgary and Vancouver and stuff like that. And it was just like the time of my life. And I'm just like, I remember this was just some random person that I felt I was like, I have no idea who this is, but sure, we'll make some small talk here.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I had a similar story, not to that level, but I was talking to a woman once and I was at a volunteer event and it turned out later I found out she was the proprietor of California Closets. And you know, something similar. It's like then somebody ended up contributing to my nonprofit and it's like just relationship building and having a conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that that's great for your networking.
I think, and as an entrepreneur, I think, you know, you try to, when you have a family to feed or whatever, you know, you get real short-sighted of like,
sure,
is this person worth my time right now? Is this going to lead to a sale? But I found like the most, some of my most like consistent clients have been conversations that were started like a couple years prior, like with Baker College, it was 2 years before I ever did my first project with them. And that started just me like cold reaching out on Facebook and being like, hey, we'd love to work with you guys or just want to introduce myself. And then it was 2 years later that we started working together. But that's a lot of how I think business relationships work. And if you're not regularly, like I kind of started thinking at the beginning of this year, it's like, if I don't build a habit around starting those, then in a year or two, there's going to be major gaps in those relationships.
There you go. That's that's foundational relationship building. I mean, that's what my business is built on. And, for my first and foremost primary business, that's my network has been built on 25 years of relationship building, intentional relationship building with people. So I had a leg up by the time I started my business in 2016, because it came from an authentic place. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it was 2 years, I think, before you started with,
Baker
with
College.
Baker. Yeah. And, I did a lot of free work when I started up my business because I was relationship building, number one. And that took me a lot farther than, just kicking people to the curb because I didn't get what I wanted in the moment. It wasn't really about that. I really needed to see what it was that I wanted. And people need to know who they're getting involved with. You need to know who you're getting involved with, and they need to know who they're getting involved with. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll take you much farther, you know, just trusting the process.
It's helped me, I think, because you asked about just, you know, hurdles to get over or whatever in my business. And I think that, like, it's helped me to realize that, like, you know, when someone reaches out to me to be like, hey, I'm interested in hiring you or whatever, oftentimes I have to reframe my expectations of that this is just the start of a relationship.
Yeah.
This might not be the closing point of the sale.
Yeah.
In most cases, it's not. In most cases, you know, I'll have a discovery call, which you would hope leads to an immediate sale. But sometimes it's not. I mean, I have clients right now that I'm just starting to work towards closing with that I met a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But we had a call to talk about the subscription model, and I've just kept in touch with them.
Yeah.
So a lot of sites, it's helped me to go, you know, if somebody comes along out of the blue because they saw a piece of content of mine, have a school in Tennessee right now that saw one of my LinkedIn posts and now we're going to start working together. I'm like, that was like the fastest track to,
wow.
I'm like, that usually doesn't happen.
Right. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But most of the time it's like they express interest, but they're going to simmer for like a year or
sure.
two.
Yeah. Things come up. And that was one of the biggest frustrations for me when I started my business was I would spend just a ton of time, you know, with relationship building with people. And then it was I would think I was onboarding with somebody and then I wasn't.
Yeah.
And then it was like, maybe it was a year later, maybe it was two, because I didn't write that person off, even though we didn't move forward as fast as I thought we were going to, or there was a setback or whatever. It happens. It's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask too, before I forget, what size is your team? Like how many employees do you have at Unveiled?
So it's me. And then I just work with freelancers. Like I like to say my employees are like my two kids and my wife, because those are the people I'm responsible to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for providing for, or helping provide. Cause my wife is like, we're pretty 50-50 in that department. I've that's kind of how I designed it, like on purpose, was I didn't want my work to become now managing a bunch of people have to think about retail, you know, not retail space, but like brick and mortar space to have an office and company policies and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't want to deal with any of that mess and hiring and firing and HR and
you're all the roles. I know, because I'm that person.
Yeah. So what I work with people on Upwork.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I have a virtual assistant on Upwork that's in the Philippines. And then I have an editor that's in the Philippines. And the two of them completely just manage the podcast. So I'll just have a conversation with a guest. And then I'll tell Rika, my VA, and I'll just be like, there's a new episode up. You know, do your thing. And then I wake up the next week and it's published and it's the social media stuff's going out. And
amazing. So how long have you had those relationships with the folks from Upwork?
Just about a year, a little over a year now.
Same consistent people.
Same two people. I got really lucky and I read this book called, what's it called? Virtual something. It was about, you know, hiring VAs and the process for working with them and how best practices and things like that. And so I read that book and I was like, well, let me try this. I got to get out of editing this podcast myself. Cause I'm like,
it's a lot of work.
This is just a lot of work. And so I started there. I was like, well, let me just take the podcast and see if I can completely offload it. And I just happened upon two people that we clicked. Their work, you know, is really good. And now we're in a rhythm.
So you have a vetting process that you get to go through if you're utilizing something like Upwork. You would go,
yeah. I mean, view you give content. Them some, you know, with an editor. I was trying to start small, like, you know, I never want to give someone a project that's like requires a lot of intuition,
sure,
right off the bat. You know, so I think like what's something that So like with Arjulin, my editor, I gave her, I basically was like, I like recorded an episode for her and then I edited it and document and like recorded my screen and showed her how I would do it. And then I gave that to her and then I said, here's the next episode, do that. You know, and she did it. And then, you know, and then we've just kind of built on that to now. To now where relationship she just building. Gets it.
Yeah. She knows exactly what you want. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've had some fits and starts on Upwork. I hired an animator once that I committed to for a big project and I regretted committing to her because when I saw the first draft, I was like, this is just, something's not clicking. It's like, you know, when you like, you just know when you see it and you know when it's not right.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you exactly what to do. It's to like get it to click. It really was just like,
so you I know to, when you know, and I yeah. know exactly what you're talking about because yeah. now I think I'm hiring your videography service.
Yeah. And and to be fair, we tried a few back and forth time and it just wasn't clicking. And so like for me on Upwork, that was like the thing that I realized was like, no matter how good someone's work is in their portfolio, you don't know how they're going to work with you.
Yes, exactly.
And how they're going to interpret directions and interpret creative vision. And so give them a snack sized project
yeah.
first or just pay them to do a test.
Right.
And that's, I have a, you know, some friends that do that too, that where they'll have a small edit and they'll be like, hey, edit this. I'm going to pay you, you know, the hourly rate. I just want to see how you do.
Yeah.
And that's where the expectation ends. There's no real commitment after that.
Smart.
And so that's really helped me. And I think, yeah, I think Upwork has been, just a great tool because I don't think about it. Like I don't do any payroll. It just comes out of my credit card. It's very affordable. And once you get in a groove with people, you know, overseas, you get to know like how they work, when, what time of day they work in the Philippines are on a complete opposite schedule
right.
of us here in the States. But you just get them going and then it's like I really do feel like they're my employees, but,
well, you're a team. I mean, that's how yeah. that happens. You're team building, relationship building.
Yeah. But then, so I work with freelancers all cause I work with schools all over the country and I don't want my life to be traveling with video equipment all over yeah. the country all the time, all wow. year long. So I find directors, local directors that I can partner with. So usually I'll go out there for the first one, you know, for the first, production with a school. And then we'll hand it off to a crew a local crew that will kind of build a relationship with me and with the client and kind of get to know how we do things. And so that's, I mean, in a way, you know, I have, you know, crew that I freelance with. I have certain editors locally here that I freelance that I hire for freelance. So it's me plus a lot of freelancers is what yeah, I tell people.
I might have a nice connection for you on that end.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Gosh, with everything that you've got going on, I have to ask. So you're an entrepreneur, a business owner, husband, father. You got to have some pet peeves.
Yeah, I saw this question on your list. And I was like,
I'm always curious and I always love, so I have so many friends that are dads, you know, yeah. and so they've always got a list of pet peeves just from around the house to whatever, or if they're business owners, entrepreneurs, whatever, they've got them for, you know, their businesses or employees also.
I could tell you, I mean, yeah, if we think of categorically like that.
So just funny ones.
If we're talking business, what I cannot stand is when people make, especially it's rampant on LinkedIn, people make a business lesson out of everything.
Okay.
So like one, what was it? Something Taylor Swift did. It was like some dumb, like just normal thing, like put her pants on or something like that. and then I saw some guy with like, in 2 minutes, Taylor Swift just taught us a masterclass in emotional intelligence. I'm like, no, she didn't. She just did.
One leg like, at a time. She put her pants thing. On.
Like,
right.
I can't remember what it was that she did, but it was just something that any human would do.
Right.
You know, and special. So like that's Oh, and then there was one that went viral on LinkedIn where the guy that posted it was actually serious, but then everyone was like parroting it. And it was a picture of him proposing to his girlfriend. And then he announced that, you know, she said yes. And he was like, you know, I got engaged to my best friend this weekend. Here's what it taught me about, what was it? I don't know, like some sort of business thing. And he had like a 10-step thing. Like, these are 10 business lessons I learned from proposing to my girlfriend. And it was all about like, kind of like business relationships and stuff like that. I'm like, dude, just propose and be happy and congratulations. Right. And it doesn't have to be a piece of content. So yeah, that would be my business pet peeve. I could tell you a lot of, you know, we have a lot of in-window air conditioning units in my house.
Okay.
And like air conditioning running when nobody's in the room tries to be crazy.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
You know.
It's like leaving the lights on when no one's home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So, but yeah.
That's fun.
I would say those are a couple of them.
Yeah. Mine's traffic. You know, it's always traffic. It always comes back to traffic for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's fun stuff. I'm always fascinated by people's pet peeves. I just think it's fun. But John, where can people find you on social media? Links?
Yeah, I'm mostly on LinkedIn. That's kind of where I hang out. So if you search John Azzoni, JohnAzzoni, you'll find me there. My email is just john@unveiled.tv. Unveiled is spelled UNVEILD. You can also, unveiled.tv is my website too, obviously. So you can check out our work there. And
what about the podcast?
Yeah, we have a podcast called Higher Ed Storytelling University. So if anyone's interested in higher ed marketing and communications, that's directly relevant. But we also talk a lot about, you know, I'll have like B2B guests on there periodically. And you know, just like we were saying, like with the webinar, like any of this stuff is applicable to, you know, any industry. It's just, we just put the higher ed label on it because that's kind of my niche.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, people can check that out. And yeah.
Amazing. Well, John, thanks for coming into the studio today. It's been a great chat.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Absolutely. We'll have to have you back. I'm going to have to...